a lot of controversy has broken out around the Women's March that took place this past Saturday, January 19th. I'll have to say that despite all of the negative press in the mainstream media in particular around the Women's March, women across the country turned out in the hundreds of thousands and also in cities and rural areas too in the United States and also internationally from London, England and other parts of the world, women were out for the Women's March. But that controversy has been around the charge of anti-Semitism by the against the leadership of the Women's March. So we're going to dig into that a bit and to, you know, not only against the Women's March, but Angela Davis has also been criticized being anti-Semitic. Jeremy Corbyn, the head of the Labour Party. And it seems these days that if you say you are pro-Palestinian or pro the rights of Palestinian people, that that is taken as you're being anti-Semitic against Jewish people. Now, you know, some people are making that equation. So we thought that it would be useful. One, we'll hear a clip from Al Jazeera about the controversy, and then we'll hear a clip from a speech that Dr. Martin Luther King gave on Silence is Betrayal.
2 years ago, the first Women's March spilled out across the heart of Washington, D.C. They came to protest sexism, racism, environmental degradation, and President Donald Trump's behavior toward women. Similar women's marches were held in hundreds of cities around the U.S.
The Women's March in 2017 was a huge deal. It was the largest protest in U.S. history. It turned out people not just in Washington, D.C., in the streets of Washington, D.C. I think the estimation was it was around 750,000 people participated. But in cities and towns across the United States and actually around the world.
This year, the Washington March has been caught up in controversy. One of the organizers, Tamika Mallory, attended a rally with Reverend Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam, who has a long history of making anti-Semitic remarks. Mallory tweeted praise of Farrakhan, prompting intense criticism in Washington media. Mallory then awkwardly tried some damage control on a popular TV talk show.
I don't agree with many of Minister Farrakhan's statements.
Specifically about Jewish people.
As I said, I don't agree with many of Minister Farrakhan's statements.
Do you condemn them?
I don't agree with these statements. At the end of the day...
You won't condemn it.
No. To be very clear, it's not my language. It's not the way that I speak.
Some organizations and individuals have dropped out of the march as a result of the controversy. The 2017 march was a catalyst for political activism among women on the left. Last November, a Democratic Party wave of diverse female candidates won seats in Congress, flipping it from Republican control and establishing a powerful check on Trump. Sociologist Dana Fisher has correlated participation in the march with political activism.
One of the things I found that's really interesting is the degree to which the people who marched in the streets, or what I call them as they resisted in the streets initially, and then they started resisting in their congressional districts. I found that people who participated in the resistance were very involved in the midterm elections.
Attendance has fallen since the original Women's March. This year, only 10 to 15,000 people are expected to gather in Washington. The weather forecast of sleet and snow no doubt play a part in that. But the annual event is now, it seems, a feature of the American political landscape. Rob Reynolds, Al Jazeera, Washington.
Yeah, and despite that report, apparently we don't have the actual estimates on Washington, D.C., but I've seen somewhere between 30 and 50,000 women. Los Angeles seems to have had the largest crowd in the United States with over 200,000 taking to the streets in Los Angeles. So it seems as though the attempts to divide the women's march and to dampen women's enthusiasm didn't quite work. Now, most recently, on Monday, January 22nd, the Women's March publicly denounced a pro-Israel bill that has been introduced in the Senate and their newly released 2019 political agenda. Now, I want to play a clip from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King on silence being betrayal, because we know about the conditions Palestinian people are facing right now, with somewhere around 80% of the children suffering from PTSD, nearly 90% of Gaza residents having no safe safe sources of drinking water. Only 11% of those families have access to safe sources of water. Even in the schools, they don't. Israel imposed a blockade back in 2007, restricting the flow of goods in and out. The territories, settlements continue to be built, even against United Nations resolutions. So the question is, are we supposed to remain silent on the policies of the Israeli government and what is happening to the Palestinian people, which is, you know, as some once said, apartheid is apartheid is apartheid. We saw it in South Africa and we're seeing it again today. And how does that mean then that you're anti-Jewish or you're anti-Semitic because you're speaking out in support of Palestinian people? The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King had to struggle with that in relation to the Vietnam War, and he was roundly criticized for his decision, but he says silence is betrayal. Let's hear a short piece from Martin Luther King now.
A time comes when silence is betrayal. That time has come for us, even when pressed by the demands of inner truth. Men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in time of war. And I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government. What do they think as we test out our latest weapons on them, just as the Germans tested out new medicine and new tortures in the concentration camps of Europe? Now that is little left to build on save bitterness. We are met by deep but understandable mistrust. To speak for them is to explain this lack of confidence in Western words, and especially their distrust of American intentions now. The world now demands a maturity of America that we may not be able to achieve. This way of settling differences is not just. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. Somehow this madness must cease. We must stop now. I speak as one who loves America, to the leaders of our own nation. The great initiative in this war is ours. The initiative to stop it must be ours.
All righty. And now I'd like to welcome our guest, Esty Chandler, member of the Jewish Voice for Peace Board of Directors in 2010. She founded the Los Angeles chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace, a national organization promoting solutions based on human rights and international law for both Palestinians and Jewish Israelis that works in broad coalition with other like-minded organizations. And along with Nagwa Ibrahim, she is the host producer of KPFK, Pacifica Radio's KPFK, Middle East in Focus. And in 2017, she launched the Middle East Minute daily news update that's also on KPFK. Esty, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me, Margaret.
Okay, so there's a lot of confusion there going on now on this whole business about the charges of anti Semitism. You just heard Martin Luther King make a damning critique of the United States as being the greatest purveyor of violence in the world, and that if they're not dealing with oppressed people, they will go into a spiritual death. And then he says that doesn't make him anti-American. So why is it then? Or just help us to understand how people are conflating being pro-Palestinian with being anti-Jewish.
Well, I think that this is something that is, you know, being revived over and over again. But I think that that has always been one of the strategies that, you know, if you call somebody an anti-Semite, that's really a damning allegation and a conversation stopper. That's not about conversation. So this notion, I think Dr. King is absolutely right that silence isn't, you know, taking no sides. It's absolutely taking the side of the oppressor, whether you're dealing with silence against Jim Crow in America, silence against apartheid in South Africa, silence against Nazis rounding up Jews, or silence against Palestinians who's, you know, are being continued to be ethnically cleansed from their land and their human rights are being abused. So this notion that if you oppose Zionism, that you are that is anti-Semitic is ludicrous from the very beginning days of the Zionist political movement to create a nation state of Jews by Jews for Jews in historic Palestine. There have been people who were against that political theory, and there have been Jews that were anti-Zionist Jews from the very get-go.
Esty, before you continue, I want you to carry on with that. But a lot of people, just to clarify, what Zionism is as opposed to anti-Zionism.
Right. Zionism was the political movement that was responsible for the founding of Israel in historic Palestine, and it was meant to be a place of Jews by Jews for Jews. It was largely initiated by the Nakba, or catastrophe in Arabic, which in 1947-48, over 750,000 indigenous Palestinians were removed from that land to create a Jewish majority, which was what the Zionist movement wanted to create the nation state of Israel. And that ideology of political Zionism is what survives today. And it's why Palestinians aren't allowed in. It's why it's how Gaza people, when they were ethnically cleansed and were pouring over the borders, many, many people were pushed down into Gaza, which then a fence was put up and it was blocked off. So that they could not return to the land. So, you know, modern-day Zionism, people who believe in it, see it as support for the state of Israel, but that is support for those laws of Israel, which is rightfully described as apartheid laws. There are separate laws for Jews than non-Jews,
yeah.
And that is the very definition of an apartheid government, when you have separate laws. Separation of peoples. The early founders very much understood that if you didn't separate the people, they would become friends. They would be neighbors. They had been for hundreds of years before the Zionist movement, before 1948, before that movement started in the early 19th century. There were, Palestine was a large Muslim majority with a large Christian minority and a small Jewish minority, and they all were living, as well together there as anywhere else in the world. It wasn't an issue.
Yeah. So I got a saw a letter that was written to the organizers of the Women's March in Los Angeles from a rabbi saying that they left the Los Angeles Women's March because from the platform, Israel as an apartheid state was mentioned, or the apartheid against Palestinians were mentioned. I'll have to say I spoke, and I certainly mentioned it, and as did a woman from the Council of American Islamic Relations. And they are saying that, well, now they're going to organize to withdraw support from the Women's March. And, you know, it's quite shocking for someone who, you know, comes from a spiritual or religious background to really speak in that way and to actually deny or try to cover up what is happening with Palestinian people, and saying that at a women's march, the rights of Palestinians and the apartheid conditions that Palestinians are forced to live on should not be mentioned. Your reaction to this?
That's right. And it also came up in one of the clips that you played, this policing of people's language, that, you know, we can talk about women's issues, but not Palestinian women's issues, that of the policing of, you know, how people are allowed to describe things, about having to, you know, separate yourself from the actual meanings of words. And it was reminded to me recently by Phyllis Bennis, a fellow board member of JVP, that this is not new, that back in the 80s, the same thing happened at a big anti-war, anti-nuclear protest in Central Park that had been set up and to occur. And it turned out to be just a couple days after Israel had invaded Lebanon. And speakers were told that they, as they walked up on stage, that they could not talk about it. And, you know, back then only one person violated that rule. But this idea that rabbis, I read an article in the Jewish Journal by a woman who said that, I believe she was also a rabbi, that she was promised that people wouldn't talk about it. It's absolutely ludicrous that people think that they have the right to police people's words. And I think that right now it's enormously troubling, because we're seeing these attacks on inspiring people, leaders of color in society. We have Mark Lamont Hill, whose his speech was being policed when he gave his speech at the UN. And Jewish people who objected to his phrasing of, you know, a free Palestine from the river to the sea, demanded that he be fired from CNN. And he was. Rashida Tlaib being accused of anti-Semitism, yeah, because she resented Marco Rubio putting the first bill of the new Senate being a bill that upholds, you know, a bunch of things for Israel put together, which would actually criminalize boycott, divestment, sanctions, things that these are our free speech to choose what to buy, what not to buy, to what to invest in, what not to. And to be continuously policing people's language.
Yeah,
I think
Esty, we're a little short of time here, but clearly, you know, the movement, the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement is growing, and I actually think that some of this blatant attacks of charging anybody who opens their mouth on rights of Palestinian people with anti-Semitism is part of trying to dampen that. And also, there's the Jewish nation state law that was passed in 2018 that states that the right to exercise national self-determination in Israel is unique to the Jewish people. So that means that Palestinians and others who are living in Israel who happen not to be Jewish, they don't have, you know, that right. But what I'd like to do now, because it is, we are recognizing Martin Luther King and his work, we want to go to a clip from Martin Luther King now about love, because people assume that because you're pro-Palestinian that somehow you hate Jewish people, you know, which is absurd. But let us hear what Dr. King said about nonviolence and love.
And this is one of the things that is basic in the nonviolent philosophy at its best. It gives one a way and a method of struggle which says that you can seek to secure moral ends through moral means. It also says that it is possible to struggle against an evil, unjust system with all your might and with all your heart and even hate that unjust system, but yet you maintain an attitude of active goodwill and understanding and even love for the perpetrators of that evil system. Now, this is the most misunderstood aspect of nonviolence. And this is where those who don't want to follow the nonviolent method say a lot of bad things to those of us who talk about love. But I still go on and believe in it, because I am still convinced that it is love that makes the world go round. And somehow this kind of love can be a powerful force for social change. Now, I'm not talking about a weak love. I'm not talking about emotional bosh here. I'm not talking about some sentimental quality. I'm not talking about an affectionate response. It would be nonsense to urge oppressed people to love their violent oppressors in an affectionate sense, and I have never advised that. When Jesus said, love your enemies, I'm happy he didn't say, like your enemies. It's pretty difficult to like some people. But love is greater than like. Love is understanding, creative, redemptive goodwill for all men. Theologians talk about this kind of love with the Greek word agape, which is a sort of overflowing love that seeks nothing in return. And when one develops this, you rise to the position of being able to love the person who does the evil deed while hating the deed that the person does.
You can love the person that does an evil deed, but hate the deed in and of itself. And of course, you could dislike or hate the policies of the Israeli government, the Netanyahu government, and others before that in relation to the oppression of Palestinian people. But you could love Israelis, right? And indeed, there is a peace movement, an anti-Zionist movement itself within Israel. Just a quick final word from you, Esty Chandler.
That's right. My family is Israeli. When I think of the people of Israel, I think of my family, who I love very much. I think Angela Davis really hit the nail on the head recently when she found out that her award from Birmingham Civil Rights Institute was being rescinded because of her outspoken support for Palestinian rights. And she commented that she didn't feel that it was primarily an attack on her, but rather against the spirit of the indivisibility of justice. And I think that that is the love, the intersectional love that we are all finding. You know, on the rise from that first Women's March, where people from different movements found themselves together, and we are uniting now in love to deliver justice in a united society, which is what we seek.